Okay. Well, those of you who are familiar with the PLC, the professional learning communities, we meet every 2 weeks, the same time, same place, same call in. We may be moving that to Zoom at some point. Right now we're still doing the PLCs, and it's certainly got its positives and negatives. One negative is if we have open mics, and of course, at any moment in time, someone might get a phone call, and if they've got their mic open, we can hear their conversations. We've had all kinds of fun with that. But we'll deal with that if it happens. Hopefully, keep your mic off, and we're in a very quiet room, and we'll try to deal with that. Right now, we're in this is actually session 259, and this time of the year, we're focusing on the new RFA that came out and focusing on strategies to develop a better, more sustainable job training grant. And it applies not only to existing grantees, but to people who are interested in getting into this program and to people who are interested in reapplying. During this competition, we like to use people who have been around as mentors. Right now, we're focusing on the terms of the grant and the conditions of it. The way you go about organizing your job training program is pretty much intact. We still have to do the things we've been talking about for the last 250 sessions, really, in terms of developing partnerships and relationships, and we've been focusing on that. We started early, actually about three sessions ago, because we know that some of these activities take a lot of time, and we were waiting for the RFA to come out, and once, of course, it has come out, and in 60 days it's due. But we tried to address the procedures or the relationships you have to develop on how to make your program better, how to make it sustainable, and we're continuing that. We previously had talked about doing the labor market assessments, doing the community assessments, how you do them, how you do your partnerships, which is one of the most important parts of this program. So we've been focusing on those, and all of those stay intact. We need to do all of those things, and actually we'll refer you back to those PLCs, which we'll have in the notes. If you're not getting notes, you can just drop your contact information to hmtri@eicc.edu. We'll make sure you're on the list. If you've got comments or something you would like to ask Channing about, or something about what is said or question, just return the notes when you get them on Friday with your questions or comments or suggestions, and we'll make sure we address those right away. So fortunately today, we always go through pretty much news from Washington, news from grantees. In the notes, you'll see grant opportunities. You'll see some resources that are available. All those things will happen. But in our section on Washington, we have the honor of having Channing with us, and Channing is the keeper of the RFA, and there have been considerable changes this year. As I said, while the substantive of what you have to do to make a good program is intact in terms of responding to what the good work that you're doing, that has changed, and the program has changed and how it's supported. So Channing, if it's okay, I'll turn it over to you, and if anyone has questions, we'll let them break into the conversation or ask them as you go. Is that okay?
Awesome. Yeah, thank you, Mike. Hi, everybody. I'm Channing Shepherd. A few of you might know me. So I'm the national lead for the job training program here at EPA in the Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization. So just like Mike said, there have been a few changes this year to the RFA and to the program, and so I just wanted to take this opportunity to sort of walk through those. If anybody has any questions, feel free to ask. But we'll just start with the main one, which is there. there's one huge policy change that happened regarding the funding that is available. So we'll be using CERCLA 104K7 funds solely this year rather than other funding sources from other EPA program offices. And because of that, we thought it was best to sort of rename the program to help, you know, better align with the refocus of the competition on training activities that are supporting different brownfield activities. And so what was formerly known as the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grant Program is now the Brownfields Job Training Program. You might hear me refer to as just, you know, job training or just JT for short. And with that, there have been, because the funding source has changed, there have been some changes to the eligible and ineligible activities. Nothing too drastic. We've added a few activities. And so I really urge people, especially potential applicants that have received one of our grants in the past, to really look at the FY22 RFA and sort of read through that to really understand what we are asking this year. Let's see. I have some notes here. So that was the large policy change that occurred. You can also find it on our Brownfields EPA webpage. There it goes into more detail explaining what that change was. And you'll also, if you're a potential applicant that is also considering applying for some of our other grants, there are also the policy changes that are happening with those grant competitions will be posted there as well. Another thing that changed, or didn't change, but we added this year, is one of the threshold eligibility criteria. We ask that you identify your target area. And in this year for FY22, we are asking to also provide the census tract numbers for the target area that you're listing in your application. Some folks might not be familiar. What is a census tract number? Where can I find it? So what we've done is in the FAQ, the Frequently Asked Questions document that is on our website, we have posted a guide explaining what the tract number is and how you can find it. Are there any questions pertaining to that?
Jenny, I have a question. Is it mandatory that they put a census tract number, or say, I know you have two approaches. You could do a city or county or a census tract. You could go to levels of detail. Is it mandatory that they include that in the threshold criteria?
Yes, it is mandatory, and the census tract numbers are in addition to the town or city or neighborhood that you are, that will be your target area. So it's not one or the other. You applicants do need to include both. The only exception.
So if you're doing the south side of Cleveland, you have to really say, well, we're doing south side of Cleveland, but includes census tract numbers, blah, 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 blah. Is that?
Yes, that's correct. So what you would do is you would use the tool that we've provided and find what census tract areas are located in that target area of yours and list those numbers in your application. And remember, this is now part of the threshold eligibility criteria, which is the section that is reviewed on a pass-fail base. So it is really important to include both of those pieces of information in your application. The only exception to that are tribal governments. They do not need to include those census tract numbers, but everybody else, all other eligible entities do.
Now, in some cases, there'll be a situation where you're doing, say, the south side of Cleveland, but there might be someone from another, the east side of Cleveland is going to enter the program, that's okay. You're targeting that particular neighborhoods or several for your grant proposal. But, okay.
Correct. This is Abby from Auberly. I have a quick question about that, too. Auberly has always served all of Allegheny County, but we have placed particular emphasis on communities along the Mon Valley because they're all brownfield sites, pretty much, the sites of old mills. Is that still okay to say we're going to serve the county but place particular emphasis on these neighborhoods, or should we decide one or the other?
I think it's okay to include those. If you want to list, you know, parking, and then also specific neighborhoods.
Okay, very good. Just
okay.
Curious.
Very good.
So what Abby might do then, she might list the census tract in each of those communities.
There's a really bad echo.
There is.
Yeah.
Can
I have
you
a
repeat
question.
That, Mike?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Did we get cut off?
This is April.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I have a question. Is now a good time to ask, or should I?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So I am curious. I'm April in with Zender Environmental in Alaska, and all of our target groups are tribal governments. Do I need to list them all or list none of them, or I need to get through the eligibility?
That's actually a good question that I'll need to look into, because Zender, you said you're from Zender Environmental, right?
Zender, yes, correct.
Yes, okay. And so I'm not sure if the exception is for tribal governments that are applying, because Zender is a nonprofit organization, correct?
Correct.
So I think that the exception only applies to actual tribal governments that are applying for a grant.
That makes sense.
And so you would still need to, although you're targeting Alaskan Native communities, you would still need to include the census tract information.
So if we target the whole state, do I need to have all 250-some tribes listed their consensus? Because we do recruit from the whole city.
Yeah, that could be... that could be a lot.
It is.
Yeah, if you don't mind sending me an email, that way I can follow up with you on this. This is the first year that we're doing this, and so we're still, you know, trying to work out all the sort of kinks that are happening with it, so...
If you also
okay.
Copy me or send to me any decisions that are made, I'll make sure that we send that to all of the PLC members or so that everyone could share with that. It seems like there are several grantees like MVWIB. They have maybe 7 or 8 groups where people who are serving several communities,
mm-hmm.
I could see where they may find it challenging. But perhaps if they list one or two census tracts in each of those communities. You know, they may have several offices, or as you say, they're getting people from around the state. You can see where that might be challenging.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'll just send you an email to keep us in mind. Thank you.
All right,
so much.
Thank you. Were there any other questions? Okay, then the last item that I just wanted to touch on was the total points that an applicant could receive when their application is being evaluated. So for it used to be lower. So in FY21, it was 109 points total that an applicant can receive, and this year we raised it to 235 total points. And so I just want to make sure that people are aware of this. The distribution didn't change. We just increased each section proportionately. So it's not too, but just want to let people know.
Great. The landmines we see, we have to be careful, and we'll be talking about curriculum on the next one, but training, you know, because the funding streams are a little different, there'll be some areas of interest that previous grantees could train in that they would not be able to train under the new RT program because it's coming all from OBLR rather than some from wastewater or some, certainly there's none coming from air programs, so that there'll be certain areas that it's not that you have to steer clear with them, you just can't use funding from this grant to. You don't want to include them as EPA support so they don't knock you out or reduce your funding because you've got an unallowable cost. But we'll talk about that curriculum next time.
Correct, yes. That is correct. What we're asking is really, you know, to make sure that the courses that, first off, to, you know, read through the RFA to make sure what is eligible, what's not eligible, to really understand the funding source, how that impacts your training curriculum, and then from there, making sure that the courses that you are proposing in your curriculum and listing in your application, that those do have some sort of nexus to, you know, brownfields-related work.
I think the way it's laid out is pretty good this year. I think that you went into a little finer level of detail as far as how you're going to be evaluating in the evaluation section. I think you explained the narrative quite well. When we send the notes out, we're going to put a little Cliff's Notes version of that in there attached for perhaps new grantees who might see that big RFA and want to condense it a little bit, but pretty much those grantees who have done an outstanding job in the past and are re-upping are, I think, in pretty good shape, primarily with their partnerships. It does rely so much on partnership building, as we've talked about from the beginning, and both with your employers and with the government in terms of other projects and with the community. And of course, those are areas that take a lot of time, and we've been emphasizing those in particular. Jenny,
yeah,
do you want
all
to,
that I had.
Go ahead. Do you want to, while we're on News from Washington, let me get a quick, Steve, are you around? Could you give us a quick run through of a few things that are going on in Washington?
Well, I can give the update on Brownfields 2021, which is registration is now open. It's a go. And there's a lot of information on the actual website, and we'll post the link in the PLC notes. But if you want to take a quick look at it, it's brownfields2021.org. So that's happening. The agenda's online and all the schedule, and it's a really good agenda with a lot of really top-notch speakers and a lot of activities and things. So I encourage you to take a look at that. And along with that, I think we mentioned 2 weeks ago that the Phoenix Award nominees, we encourage you to consider submitting a nominee. And those are due by September 3rd. That's a close of business on Friday, September 3rd. And the winners will be notified on or before November 1st, and then will be announced at a Brownfields event on the evening of December 10th. So again, encourage you to consider submitting a Phoenix Award also. And the other thing I want to mention, along with what Channing said, yesterday they did an outreach webinar. I don't know if anyone on the call participated or not, but if you didn't and you're saying, gosh, I wish I would have been able to watch that, a recording of the live webinar will be made available on the FY22 Brownfields Job Training Grant solicitation page, along with all the good information about the RFA and FAQs and everything else. So if you're interested in that webinar, which is really good, a lot of good information, you might want to take a look at that if you haven't already. And then just a couple other things. Again, want to thank everybody for submitting evaluations for us at the end of the year. We really appreciate getting feedback on the things we're doing. We want to know what we're doing right, things we can improve upon, and things you'd like us to undertake. So, again, your input is valuable, and we appreciate it. We've mentioned, I think, in the past, we're going to be working on a grant recipient directory, and it's going to be a valuable directory that will allow us to do a lot of things and provide a lot of networking opportunities among grant recipients and also provide a lot of information to employers. So we're going to be sending that out in the coming weeks. So we'll give you a heads up again when that's ready to be sent out, because we really need your feedback on the information so we can keep it up to date. And then lastly, Mike, do I have time for the three questions that came in?
Yeah, we need some clarification for people who are, this is their first time application and they might be a little confused, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, but why don't you go through those questions?
Okay. Three questions. The first one is, my organization is registered in SAM.gov. Should I check to make sure the account is active? And of course, the response, your answer would be yes. You know, you can only successfully submit an application package if your organization has an active account in SAM, and the registration must be renewed annually by the e-business point of contact. And that leads to the second question, who is the e-business point of contact? And the e-business point of contact, or sometimes referred to as just e-biz POC, is the individual in your organization who oversees all activities within grants.gov and grants permissions to authorized organization representatives. If your organization is already registered in SAM, take note of who's listed as the e-biz POC. And then the third question is, can someone other than the authorized organization representative submit the application package in grants.gov? And the answer is no. The authorized organization representative designated by the e-business point of contact must sign and submit the application package. So those are things you could be taking a look at as you prepare for the application if you're not, you know, sure if you know who the e-business point of contact is, or in some cases from year to year, a person will transition out or retire or something, and you may need to make sure someone is in that position. So those are things to take into consideration.
in these early stages, and of course we're counting about 4 weeks now, maybe it starts to condense on to 60 days or so. We want to, those things that might sabotage your program, we want to focus on those, and those things that take a lot of time. And of course, you definitely want to make sure that you're going to be able to submit this really good piece of work that you're working on for the next 60 days. So you want to make sure whoever that is, and they may say, oh, no problem, we submitted one 2 years ago. No good. No good. You got to make sure they run, do a dry run. Make sure they, of course, go to grants.gov. Make sure that they're good to go on SAM. If they know who the eBiz contact is, who may be also the AOR, they have to designate that AOR and if some, whoever's going to be submitting that grant. So all I'm saying is right now, before you go too far, why don't you do a dress rehearsal and just make sure. Even if you submitted one 2 years ago, don't assume that everything is good. Also, it's important now to look at your calendars and lay out your schedule between now and October 5th. And we have all these things in the notes. We're getting a little bit of, I apologize for the echo. So lay out your business plan and then figure out what you need to do, what your milestones are. And I would say you want to have your finished product the week before. So we're really talking about the end of September, that week, just in case, and you could fine-tune things. We'll be talking about fine-tuning your grant proposal, but start laying out your calendar now. And you want to also get your team together. We've talked about in the last PLCs, we talked about going out and doing your community assessment, your partnership assessment, your labor market assessment, and find out if you have to bring on some extra help. Can you do this all yourself? You need to have someone, and we find that if an organization has people with talents, say reaching out to government, who in your organization is familiar with whether it's county or city government or state government, they're used to, they know contacts, they know people. See if you could borrow some of their time and get them to start working on the partnership building as associates with the government offices. You're going to find that some of these people can get you data you'll need for your narrative that will be very helpful. You want to be as quantitative as you can, and they may uncover sources or people who can get you information that will be very valuable. And they will also be the same people who will help develop these partnerships to get people on your advisory committee, which you want to do if you can before you submit your grant, and so you could include it in your narrative. You want to have your trainers pretty much on board if you can. That's another area. You want someone who's a techie there. But what I'm saying is, in terms of this partnership development, you'll find there are people who are really good with government. They know the people, they know the names. There are other people who are really good with community. They're community people. And we've talked about this in developing partnerships. You want to find some, identify some people who would like to get out into the community. And you've got to get out into your target groups. Now, some of you who are existing recipients of the grant, of the old grant, have those connections already. You want to find out what's going on in the community and establish those community partnerships, and you want to get them on your advisory boards. And this all takes time. And in our partnership PLC, we talked about this whole process, and this goes for both the community partnering, the government partnering, and the employer partnering. You do the same thing for all three of those. And what you want to do, you want to find someone who's good at working with that group. You want to get them out there and start making contacts. And then when they start working those contacts, they want to go from, as I said, general to specific, where you want to see if they're interested in the program. You want to see if they could be on the advisory board. You want to see if they could have a guest appearance, perhaps even a training in your program. And you, what you're working your way towards is a letter of support that you'll be able to use in this. And this is very important, and it's all can be done by the same person in a series of contacts between those people identifying the right person who's interested in the program, and then working that particular person and going again from, will you help us? Do you like us? Will you support us? Can you give us a letter of support? And you want to do that. And the nice thing about this proposal, when you're looking at your partnering section, when they look at evaluation criteria, you've got 60 points and they're all done the same way, whether it's the community, whether it's your government, which is other brownfields programs, other remediation programs going on, and it might be government sponsored. And the same thing goes for your employers. And it'll also apply to your leveraging. So those people, and you have to also identify a person, and these may be all the same people, but if you have people with propensities to work, they work well with employers, they've been in industry, see if you could snag some of their time to start identifying employers. And you want to, of course, if you can, in your proposal, name names, be as quantitative as you can, and have those people collecting data. And all through this program, what we're talking about is you start collecting the data. When we get into that last month, you're going to start writing this grant. You want to have all the information behind you. You want to have your advisory committee set up. You want to have an non-advisory committee. You're going to have employers. You're going to have someone who's familiar with government or in government. You're going to have people from the community. So that whole area will help you a lot in the narrative and in as they rank your, as they evaluate your proposal, it will take care of things like leveraging, which will fit in, and it'll fit in a lot of different categories when you have that basic knowledge base of the people you're going to be working with. Of course, you're also going to want to line up your grant writers, someone in your organization who is really good at words. And we also, when we talk about strategies, it's always, we find it's helpful to funnel everything through a particular person. Sometimes that's that person will submit the grant. Sometimes it's someone else. Sometimes it's someone in your organization that's really good at writing. And that person doesn't necessarily have to know the weeds or be familiar with that. They need to know the grant and spend a lot of time with the RFA. And they need to spend a lot of time with the people who are researching those particular areas. So when they go to the RFA and they look at the narrative and they look at the evaluation criteria, they can call on, okay, can you get me some names? Who have you lined up as employers? Can you get me those support letters? Do you have the information? This is what I need as far as remediation projects going on, or who are the leaders in the community and what are our relationships with non-religious and religious organizations and who are the community leaders. So that grant writer is going to be pulling all this information as they go along. So these early stages, a couple months away, you want to start laying out your milestone charts and you want to get these people together. You want to get commitments from them. And you want to start holding these regular meetings. As you develop your proposals and as these people start bringing in your names of contacts, see if you could include them in your planning process. Again, when you go into your narrative and you start writing, one of those subtle things in how well you do is, have you included your partners, whether they're leveraging partners or support partners, are they included in the development of this proposal? And you want to be able to indicate and write that they are. And when we get down to that last month and your grant writers are starting to put words on paper, you've got to have this information. And this, as I've been saying over the several last month or so, it takes time to gather all this information. And if I were organizing a group and it fell primarily on me, I would try to snarf some time from these people I've just identified and say if they could help you out. And I would try to have a meeting with them and set up your schedule. Hopefully everything will be done, say, way before the 26th of September, but have your regular meetings or your Zoom meetings and have deliverables for each of these people. And what are they going to do? And when are they going to do it? And clearly, in these PLCs, we've been going from building the foundation, and as I said, next week we'll be talking about curriculum. Some of these things will depend on the information that these people gather. When you start talking about target groups and target communities, you really have to have some of this other work done. You've got to have someone that's been out in the community. When you start identifying target census tracts, you've got to have someone who's been examining these communities and becomes very knowledgeable of what's out there. And that person who's working with government organizations needs to know who else is working in the target census groups that you're identifying. And ideally, there are other people in government that may be able to tell you, oh, we're working in that census tract, or we're working in that community. We've got some other programs that are going on. They might be HHS, and our program may be a redevelopment community, might be a housing project, maybe a lot of other things that person that's working the communities and working with government, and they may have to interact. That's why you're going to have these joint meetings between the people who are researching these different areas. That, well, what's going on in that community that we may or may not know about? And it would be a shame if something was going on in the community that you're interested in and you don't know about it. And so that's where someone in city hall or county government needs to know, well, where you're working or you're interested in working in this particular area, why don't you shift over to this other census tract, because we got things going on there and we would like to see more, and we could provide you with more support, more leverage support, if you include that particular area in your grant. And of course, you've got to work with the people in terms of transportation to make sure that your students can get to these locations, so that they're not on the other side of town, or there's no bus trips there, or there's no facilities to do training in that community. So it's kind of a great big jigsaw puzzle that we're working with here. But I think that if you develop this body of knowledge, and build your foundation with your potential partners, with people who will be on your advisory committee, potential trainers, you'll be able to then, during that last month, focus on writing. And of course, when we get to that last month, we'll talk more about the grant writing part of it. But your grant writing is not going to go too far if you don't have this other information at your disposal. Certainly, grant recipients from the past have already built these relationships. And those of you on the call who this is your first time and you're brand new to this, you may have gone to Channing's RFA meeting, and you may be listening to these PLCs and you're saying, oh my gosh, we can't do this. You may say, we're not ready. And this is a question that's been asked in the past. And my answer is, go for it. My answer is, we have seen in the past that people have applied one time, two times, as many as three times, and they've gotten this grant. And that first time, maybe they didn't hit all the marks. Maybe they missed some points. And of course, when we talk about the grantsmanship and the writing of this, we'll talk about dissecting that RFA and make sure, whether you put it on index cards or on Blackboard or on your computer, make sure that everything is asked is responded to. Maybe they missed some points, or they weren't familiar, or they didn't have enough familiarity with the neighborhoods or what was going on in their community. That's okay. Submit anyway. And the reason I'm saying submit is that you will have a chance if you submit, and we've had people come right out of the gate, wrote a tremendous proposal. And there is some consideration to new grantees. They consider that they are new versus someone who's had one for several years. And those grantees have to up their game. And they probably are judged, I would say, maybe a little harder than a brand new grantee. There are these special considerations involved that are discussed in the RFA. But if you submit and say you don't get it this year, it's not that long until we'll be talking about this next beginning of next summer about the next RFA. And between now and then, you'll have the advantage of going to the Brownfields meeting. You'll have the advantage of going to several webinars, finding, listening to what other grantees have done. And most of all, you'll have the advantage of talking to your regional coordinator about where your program is or the way you submitted it and maybe where you have to go. And between now and then, there's a whole lot of assistance you might be getting from other grantees, perhaps from us, from EPA, from the regional coordinators. While I have the regional coordinators on my mind, I want to suggest to all of you, if you have not contacted your regional coordinator, contact them and let them know that you're planning or considering submitting an RFA response. Many of the regions, in fact, Region 7 is going to have one on the 17th, they're going to have their own regional discussions, just like this one and the one that Channing had yesterday. They all may have their own, and they have a list of people who are potential grant applicants to the RFA. And you want to be on that list. And those will be happening, I would say, in the next month. And if you miss it, they may have recordings of it or notes, as we do here. And it'll put you on that regional track where they'll be discussing things that are happening in the region. While they can't talk to you specifically about your particular grant, they can talk about the RFA, about responding, what's happening in the region, and some good sources of information. So if you haven't, or even if you're an existing grantee, just touch base with your regional coordinator and let them know that you're, we just thought we'd drop you a line and give you a heads up that we're planning on submitting or considering applying, and please put us on your email list or keep us in mind for any Zoom calls that you may be having between in the future, period. Also, when it comes to your regional coordinator, if you have questions, and I think Channing did a great job in saying if you have questions, email him direct. Also, email your regional coordinator. If you, and where I, this is in particular concern that I've seen is when you get into curriculum, which we'll talk about next time, but when you talk about it, if you have a question about a particular training that you're thinking of doing and you're not sure, just pass it by Channing or your regional coordinator and get a reading on it to make sure there are some nuances there. There are certain things that they just can't fund because the money is not, it does not allow them to fund it, where in previous years there was some money put in by other offices and they were able to do that type of training. But that isn't the case this year. And you just don't want to have your grant reduced because you're training. Now, you can train, but you can't use EPA money. You could train all sorts of things, and that's preferable. And you'll have to, in your narrative, make sure that you make that distinguishing, that difference between the leverage training, all the wonderful things you're going to be doing that are assisting students in making your program much better, but they're not using EPA funds. And you want to definitely lay that out. And I think EPA has done a good job in having that chart, the training chart that that lists those courses. So it makes it fairly easy to see, well, this is what they're proposing that we support. And of course, it also indicates you don't want something on there that they don't. So, and it's pretty well planned out that way. So, does anyone, while we have Channing on the line, or anyone have any questions about this experience we're all about to partake on. It's I know it's a challenge to write these grants. If you pick it off a little at a time, it makes it easier. And certainly if you have these milestones as you go along, you're not going to be overwhelmed. You just really can't write this grant in the last couple of weeks before it's due. It just doesn't work. But again, as I say, submit no matter whether you're new or not.
Hi, Mr. Sanu.
Yes.
Hi, this is Pat Brown from Cleveland. I just had a couple of questions regarding the Brownfield grant. You mentioned the trainees. Now, do the trainees have to be registered with the local or state or SAMHSA.gov, either of those?
No. Well, the grant recipients, if you're applying for the grant to EPA, you is the one that's going to develop this our JT program. You have to be registered. But once you get your program going, no, all of the people who will be attending, we'll be talking later about recruitment and recruiting your classes. In other words, what we're talking about here is your organization applying to EPA for $200,000 to develop a JT or a job training program in your community in Cleveland. Once you get that grant, then you will be in your grant. You'll be talking about the training you'll be doing and that you'll be recruiting students probably in cohorts of 15 to 20 people, and you'll be bringing them in and training, and you'll be screening them, and you'll be training them, and you'll be placing them. So that's
okay.
They don't have to be registered with anyone. They just have to be a resident, a citizen, or a resident, a legal resident, and they have to be over 18 or over.
Okay, so if we collaborate, like with, I don't know if this is part of the curriculum that the EPA is funding, but if we collaborated, like with a landscaping company. Does the landscaping company, if they're going to be doing like on-the-job training skills, do they have to be registered with the local state or SAMHSA.gov? Like, is there requirements for the on-the-job training organizations or businesses that we're going to be collaborating with?
Well, if you're working with partners, if they're not a .org, in other words, if they're not a nonprofit, and they're providing you with services, if they're giving it to you free and they're not using EPA funds, in other words, if you're not paying them, you could do whatever you want with them. In other words, EPA they don't really get involved for your support partner. Say you have a landscape company, and they say, we believe in this and we want to help you. We would like to, we'd like to have some of your students do some job training with us. We're not going to charge you anything. We're doing this in kind as a service because we know that when these people graduate and they have certain certifications, we will probably like to hire some of them. So we're going to give you in kind as support, leverage, we call that leverage support. We're gonna give this to you free. If it's free and government monies aren't spent, they don't have to register or anything. That's between you and them. And that's what we call in-kind or leverage support. They're giving you this free. Now, if they want to charge you for doing any kind of training, whether it's a consultant or a company, now you have to go out on bid. And then now whenever EPA gets very uptight, and rightfully so. Anything that involves their money has to go through, you know, the three-bid process and the vetting, and it has to be justified, and it has to fit in the proposal. But if this is in kind, many of our grantees are getting many in-kind contributions, whether it's from government agencies or from companies who are lending them They're lending them fit-up outfits, their PPE. Some of them are providing stipends to students. They're providing transportation. And they just wanted a good thing. And they also, in the back of their minds, they're thinking that we may want to hire, in particular in this labor shortage, these graduates of this program. Does that kind of make sense to you at all, the difference there?
Yes, it makes sense. Now, are we allowed, I haven't had a chance, and I'm going to review the grant proposal, but are we allowed to give the students a stipend in this?
No, you can't. Well, not with EPA money. You can't. Okay. EPA is EPA money and government money in general is very, very specific on what you could spend it on. And you could only spend it, as you read through that RFA, on certain courses. There's only the only courses you can teach using their money are things that have to do with brownfields remediation, things like you could do what they call OSHA 10 because it's health and safety and it relates to some of the projects of cleaning up a waste site, HAZWOPR, which is hazardous materials cleanup, lead cleanup, asbestos cleanup. These are things that EPA will support, but they will not support life skills or stipends or any of those things, because it's only $200,000, and they just the money that are given to them are very specific use. That's why you have to have partnerships are just so important in this. It's really everything. Now, what you may want to consider that you've talked about is linking up with a bigger organization that, for example, you might find a goodwill in your community in Cleveland or a Jobs for Youth or any number of organizations. And you may say, we would like to do environmental training. And there is this job training grant that EPA has. And we would like to partner with you. And you could submit the grant and we'll be kind of a sub-partner. We would be a sub-partner for you, and we could organize this program under your auspices. And we have many grantees that are actually sub-grantees to the county. The county has the grant, and they have all those resources, and they've subbed out to a nonprofit organization or a community college to run the program. And so that's something you may want to consider if you've got a goodwill or any sort of program that might be doing some training in your community.
We have an organization that we partner with that give out stipends to youth, and we teach them our green training program. But I didn't know that's more local. I didn't know we could do that, you know, with the grants and everything, the national grants. So.
Well, you may want to consider partnering with that group, because this is a very local program, as we were talking down to census tracts. So you may want to contact those people and say, you know, we've got this thing. We could work with you as a sub-partner and meet with them and show them the RFA and see how you could partner with them to include cleanup, you know, environmental remediation. Something you may want to consider.
Okay. Sounds great. Mm-hmm. Sounds great. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm in Ohio, so what region is that? Is that?
Five.
Well, that's five. Yeah, thank you. Five.
That's five.
Hi, Mike. This is Linda. Linda, I am the job training coordinator with Region 5. How are you, Pat? One thing I want to mention on the job training, just make sure that you and any other applicant should make sure that the on-the-job training is beneficial and connected tightly to the training. And just to make sure when you submit your proposal that any on-the-job training does not appear as free labor from any of the students in your program. So it must be spelled out clearly in the application. That's one thing that we have seen. So you just need to make sure that it's just very tight and very clean in your application when you when you submit it.
Okay.
And so you can
give
me
a call.
Okay,
can I get your name?
Yes, I'm about to tell you that now. Again, my name is Linda Morgan. I am the Region 5 Brownfields Job Training Coordinator, and my number is 312-886-4747, or you can feel free to send me an email at morgan.linda@epa.gov.
Okay, morgan.linda.epa.gov. Okay. My last question is, I submitted a workforce grant with the EPA once before. I wanted to know if I could get, like, an evaluation, or someone could tell me, like, what did I do wrong, why I didn't receive the RFA and the funding. So, you know, what my score was, if someone could, like, kind of explain that to me a little bit, would be helpful. I don't know if that's allowed, but
So, Pat, again, this is Linda. So in the application that you submitted with the letter that you received, there was a request that you can make for a debriefing, but that request had to be made within, I think, 15 days of you receiving the letter.
Okay.
But you can give me a call offline. Again, just give me a call offline, and I will we can talk about the current application in terms of, I mean, the current guidelines in terms of eligibility. But but as far as your previous application, that did have some restrictions to it.
Okay.
Based on that.
Okay. Okay.
Cuyahoga County has a long history with EPA. They were the very first pilot, and because of their senator, the program was really born. They were the first one. Cuyahoga Community College goes way back, and they were on early on, and I'd sure like to see a grant program in Cleveland. That'd be great.
Oh, thank you.
Good luck with that.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Any other questions? Have we got Channing? We've got Linda on the line. Anyone have questions this far? We'll be, like I say, we're going to talk about more evaluation criteria in 2 weeks. We'll be going on to, we'll be talking more about this curriculum, and then we're going to move on to recruitment, assessment, and retention as we move towards the grant due date.
Yeah, I think that was it for me.
Oh, sorry. Can you tell me when the webinar is going to be available to view? I missed it yesterday, and I really want to check it out, but I don't see where it's been posted yet.
Yeah, so this is Channing. It hasn't been posted yet. We're still working on getting that. Like I said, it just happened yesterday, so we're trying to get it up on the website as quickly as possible. It'll be on the FY22 job training grant solicitation page. So I would just suggest keep checking there, because that's where it will be posted at.
We're going to put those links in. All those links will be in the notes that you'll get on Friday. And actually, they've got lots of things up there. They'll have the RFA on there, the FAQs on there. It's the go-to place, I think, as far as EPA has put everything in that one area.
There's also already a copy of the PowerPoint slides that were used during the outreach webinar yesterday, if you want to check those out beforehand, too.
Okay, awesome. I do have those already, and I'll just keep an eye out for the video. Thank you so much.
Any other questions? I think the one thing I'd like to pass on, and I'm repeating myself, but contact your regional coordinator. Just drop them an email. And I think Linda, they like to know who's going to be applying, don't they? I think just let them know that you'd like to
yes,
be put on
do.
The list.
Yes, he did.
You all have a little competition who can get the most grant recipients, and I know they're always interested in lots of people applying.
Among three things? Of course not.
There's no competition here?
I've seen a lot of yelling at our all grantee meetings. And I think each region, and this gets to the point, EPA is on your side. This is not, it's, if there's a competition, it's between everyone who's applied. But to be honest, they want to see you get those grants as much as you want to get it. So I would not have any hesitation in talking to them about whatever issues you might have. I think they're on your side. Well, if there's no other questions, of course, you could always respond to the notes and questions or comments, and we'll be same time, same place in 2 weeks from now. So that'll be on the 25th of August. So between now and then, if you have any questions, just email me. I could forward them on to Channing, and particularly as you go forward. And good luck, and like I say, do your foundation building as early and as thorough as you can, because it's going to help you have anxiety attacks as you get closer to October 5th. Well, this is a tough grant to, it's a beautiful grant, because once you get this grant approved, it's a slam dunk. I'll, you know, of course, then you have to say, oh my gosh, we got it. Now what do we do? But you really have a good roadmap. I mean, this is a cooperative agreement rather than the grant that many academics get. Here's $200,000, do whatever you want. This is really, you're doing all the hard work and heavy lifting now. And once you get this, you just follow that work plan and you'll be in great shape. So I think you just have to invest that time next month or two. Well, thanks, everybody. Any other questions? Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. And we'll talk to you in a couple
weeks. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Have a good day.
Take care. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you.